Johnny Appleseed? Never mind. It's the whole thing.
That must have been from your preschool days.
It is. 207? I'm very briefly going to make an introduction to two people who are at the care center, one of which you know very well, because Susan Timmer, to my left, your right, has already spoken and you've already listened to her talk. So, Susan Timmer. But on my right side is Sharon Ray Zone, who is involved in managing our infant mental health program at the care center. And very much involved in providing in-home services for many of the children and the clients that we see who are going to talk about the efficacy of PCIT with in-home settings.
Well, good afternoon. As Anthony mentioned, I've been fortunate to be involved in our 0-5 program, which is known at the Care Center as the Infant Mental Health Program, where we provide primarily services. We focus primarily for services for birth to 3, but we also serve a significant number of children ages 4 and 5. And the key difference is that about 90% to 95% of our clients are all seen in home. So we have had some opportunity to work with those children in terms of and families in terms of providing PCIT. And we want to share with you a little bit of our journey in looking at making that decision and what we've discovered along the way. So we're doing this as a collaborative effort, as we always do. So we looked at, first of all, why do we need to do PCIT in home? And first of all, it really is a way to increase access to services. Many of our families, and kind of anecdotal evidence, says about 80% of them wouldn't receive services if we didn't go in home, because they have no transportation, or there's multiple young children at home, and there's no child care. So it's also less stigmatizing. There's a number of service delivery programs in early intervention and early education and health care that are done in home. So it's a less stigmatizing thing to think of having a therapist come to your home. And it's the place where children live. I mean, it is their natural environment. It's a place where we can see what naturally goes on between parents and children and all the distractions and things that are in home. And so that can be really helpful, too, because we get that opportunity to see what families deal with on a regular basis. And our contract requires it, so that's another reason. So we wanted to know, would bringing those services in home, a PCIT in home, would it work? And studies have shown, as we've talked about quite a bit this last 2 days, there's lots of evidence that shows that PCIT does work. But those studies really look at providing those, most of them providing those services in the clinic. So we wanted to look at, well, is it the content of PCIT? Is it the protocol? Is it the procedures? Or what about location? And if you look at this photo, it makes me wonder how many of you provide services in home. Can we see a show of hands? Okay, so that's really not my home, but but you may recognize it as places where you might have seen. You know, there are some significant challenges in home, and there's some significant differences between that and the clinic. So we're gonna take a look at those differences. In the clinic, therapists are behind a one-way mirror. They communicate, as you know, through the bug in the ear, which really focuses that parent as the agent of change. Also in the clinic, parents are in the room. There's few distractions. Typically, there's no breakable objects, so the focus can really be on the play and that interaction. Also, the timeout chair. There's not a lot of places for that child to go to except the timeout chair. Of course, we do know they go up and down and over tables as well, but really there's fewer opportunities for social engagement in the clinic. I think we have a little video here. I'm going to show you a couple of video clips that will illustrate some of these things. So in this case, it's a video that.
This is a cat.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay.
I'll have to see where it is. Okay. Great reflecting. You want to thank her for using her words?
Thank you for using your words, Tana, to tell me what you like.
Nice, Reed. That was a great praise.
So as you listen to the therapist behind the mirror, you could hear it, the mom can hear it, but the child can't. Mostly, yeah, Susan said. Sometimes that the volume is up loud enough. What'd she say? Also in home, it's a situation of where is the therapist? In this photo, you'll see the therapist is that white arm, white-capped arm there sitting behind the parent, trying to whisper into the parent and give a little bit of a less obtrusive.
Thank you for sharing.
Okay. So in that case, sometimes the therapist will sit behind. Sometimes the therapist will position themselves differently in the room where the child is actually can see, but we try and be very unobtrusive. Also, in the home, there's lots of distractions. So let's see. It was. It'll come back. This is a moment of letting you see kind of what's going on in this home as the therapist is trying to provide the services or doing the deep excoding. Oh. It's there.
Uh-oh. There's more.
Okay, that was the dog. You'll see the dog in a few moments. But unfortunately, mom didn't pick up the phone, which also can help and happen too, or knocks at the door. So a significant number of distractions can be there. Here we wanted to take a look at the fact that the therapist is available.
Here, Emily, I can't get her. How am I going to get her to do what I want?
No, no!
No castle.
So you notice mom turned right to the therapist and said, hey, I'm stuck here. How do I get out of this? And so that's another kind of a challenge to deal with. Okay, and in home, the timeout space is rarely distraction-free. In addition, there's lots of places where the child knows what's going to get a strong reaction from the parent. So those little escape routes or that, you know, cherished picture or the throwing the toy at the TV, you know, all those things can get a strong reaction. But we'll give you a look here at what happens with Emily. Oh, there she goes.
Do you want to go on timeout?
Come on.
Emily.
Come on.
This is a pre-treatment, Deepix.
Good point.
Emily,
come
on. You're in timeout. Emily.
Okay, so lots of fun at Emily's house that day. Okay, so also just in terms of looking at some of the studies that had been done in terms of program delivery, the CDC meta-analysis really looked at a variety of characteristics. The one thing that they found to be effective was that practice or role-playing, so that rehearsal piece, the checked item up there is the one characteristic across all the programs that were looked at. But they didn't look at the therapist's role and they didn't look at the therapeutic environment. So we wanted to take a look at that. And we wanted to pair or have some of the children getting PCIT services, and then we wanted a treatment as usual. And so what we came up with was something we gave a name to and a moment of brainstorming, which was toddler intervention and problem solving. So our treatment as usual was really a solution-focused type of, you know, sitting down with the parent, trying to identify challenging challenges that they have, problem behaviors, and then trying to come up with some solutions. So they could include a variety of different ways in terms of increasing child development or routines or just working on ways to kind of manage those behaviors. And in the contrast, the other group got PCIT. And Susan's going to continue now and tell you about the study.
I also just want to mention that the reason we had to come up with an actual name for something, an actual intervention, was that when you do a study like this in a community mental health setting, you can't tell therapists, yeah, just go out and, you know, really don't do anything. You know, I mean, who would do that? We had enough trouble trying to talk people into, you know, participating in the study anyway. So we had to come up with a program that really had a little bit of legitimacy, like, hey, you know, this could really work. This could be really important. You could link kids up to services. Who knows? You know, we don't know that PCIT works in home. We had a bunch of believers, didn't we, Sharon? I mean, they're like, no, PCIT works. But we forged ahead anyway. And our hypotheses were the following. We thought that compared to TIPS, PCIT would show greater improvements in parent verbalization, change in parent verbalizations. We would decrease parent stress, and we would improve kids' behavior. And, you know, I have to say that you think, oh, piece of cake, right? PCIT can conquer the world. Well, yeah, it really can, but these are also shark-infested waters. Now, why, you might ask? Okay, well, consider what Sam was saying earlier about what the power of the intervention is. The person, right? Okay, we know if you give somebody a pink pill, you got a 30% chance of making them better. What happens if you send a therapist into the home with good intentions and assessment-based, problem-focused therapy? You know, you might really make some big changes, and we're comparing PCIT to something that's kind of a wild card. We made it up, yeah, but it's a wild card. So I'm just, you know, giving you this fair warning because it's not such a piece of cake. All right, this is legit. Okay, and now just to give you a little more information about what we were doing, Sharon, you pretty much explained this well. But this slide really just shows some of the ways we tried to make PCIT different from TIPS. Because, okay, you send somebody out into the home that loves PCIT, and you have a little danger if you're telling them you cannot do PCIT. It's like you have to give them tasks that are so different and spell out exactly what you want them to do. Otherwise, you could get some PLIPS or, you know, some combo pack, you know, tipsy PCIT. Oh, that's even better. Tipsy PCIT. So, you know, the best solution was to send therapists out there that really hadn't been trained in PCIT first. Then, you know, there wasn't that kind of worry about what were they going to be doing. But in order to check about what they were doing, we sent research assistants out into the homes with therapists to kind of do some treatment fidelity checks to make sure there was no crossover. Of course, another way that you'll be able to see and you can judge for yourselves is in the outcomes. But sometimes that takes a long time to get to, and you can really muck things up in the in-betweens. So these were our inclusion and exclusion criteria. We took kids, included kids in the study that were 2 to 7 years old. The caregiver had to be the legal guardian. So we didn't have any kids in the study that had open CPS cases or DCFS cases. This was really because we wanted to create a situation where we actually didn't have to worry about the complexities of those child welfare cases. So, you know, we're trying to really establish that PCIT in home, whether, well, we're trying to find out whether it could work. So this was our idea of the best way to do that. We also attempted to eliminate kids with serious cognitive delays that already had diagnoses. Okay, this is, they already, if they had a diagnosis on the autism spectrum or cognitive delays, then we did not include them. If the parents had serious mental health problems, like one was schizophrenic, diagnosed schizophrenic, we said, maybe not a study case. So that, those were our sample study kids and parents. So this is what happened. We enrolled 181 families into the study, and my old eyes can't read this very well. 137 had clinical intake. Oh, yeah, I could look behind me, couldn't I? So there was a little slippage in between the referral coming in and then actually getting out to the house to collect kind of the initial assessment information. And then from that point, thank you. This is a true collaboration. 81 had the pretreatment assessment. 75 had some amount of PCIT, and 42 ended up completing the program. Now, here's just another little thing. We limited the amount of PCIT that kids got to 16 weeks because we had to compare it with this other treatment that we made up. And we said, okay, well, we're bound to see some important changes in 16 weeks. So whether they were finished or not, at 16 weeks, we did a post-treatment assessment. Then following that, and that arrow didn't fit onto the page, I apologize for that, we 6 months later did a follow-up assessment just to see whether the any treatment gains were sustained. So this was our sample of 81. And you can see it's a fairly typical kind of PCIT clientele, a little younger, I think, than our usual client anyway, probably because we were using kids referred to our infant mental health program, and they see the kids 0 to 5 and not the 5, 6, or 7-year-olds. They were diverse, and they were low income primarily. You can see that 72% earned less than $15,000 a year, and only 22% were reported to have been exposed to violence. And Nils is going to tell us about our pre-post treatment comparisons. This kind of shows you how many, what percentage of kids completed treatment and terminated early, and the percentage that never started. Now, you could kind of see what that percentage was going to be like from the arrows that I showed you earlier. The average number of sessions that droppers, that's kind of a weird way of talking about people that terminate treatment early. Well, just for sake of the ease of the term, we'll just call them droppers. You can see that they got substantially fewer numbers of sessions than the completers. And at the end of the 16 weeks, we, of course, you know, they can be referred on to other treatment. And 32% of the kids in PCIT were referred on to other treatment. And 42% of kids that were referred to TIPS were referred on to other treatment. This shows the difference between the two groups' improvements in those encouraged parent verbalizations. So you can see a huge effect. So let me tell you something. I breathed a huge sigh of relief because it looks like those TIPS providers weren't coaching. That was the one thing we said. You cannot coach. They didn't coach. At least they didn't coach them in changing the way they spoke to the kids. So huge improvements in the PCIT group, no change in the TIPS group. Here's a graph showing the changes in discouraged parent verbalizations at the initial and final assessment. So those are questions, commands, negative talk. And you can see a huge decrease in the PCIT group, and little change in the TIPS group.
Yay!
Here is a very extremely beautiful graph of the Iberg intensity scale changes from pre to the initial to the final assessment. And guess what? Changes in both groups. And so we kind of went, oh, well, you know, I guess it makes sense. There's more than one kind of treatment that could actually help. I mean, our therapists are doing something out there. But here's a little interesting second graph. This is the percent of kids at the initial and final assessment that score in the clinical range on the Iberg intensity scale. Okay, so you can see a significant difference between the percent of PCIT kids that are scored in the clinical range at post or at the 16-week and the percent of TIPS kids that score in the clinical range. The Iberg problem scale shows, this is a graph showing the change from the initial to the final assessment. And you can see a significant change for those PCIT kids and a little change in the TIPS kids. Parenting stress, all your favorite outcome measures, and I get to show them out to you. You can see here a significant change for both the PCIT and TIPS groups in parenting, a reduction in parenting stress. But again, this shows the difference in the percentage of parents that score in the clinical range on that total parenting stress scale. And you can see a significant difference between those PCIT parents and the TIPS parents. Many fewer of them score in the clinical range at post. Bravo, PCIT. Not that we are biased or anything. So, and now I'm just going to show you a little bit, or talk a little bit about the follow-up study. Let's get all these little things up there first. So you can just kind of see what the sample was like of the people that we contacted. You can see that about a third of them had some mental health services within the 6 months following the end of the intervention. I guess I should say very quickly the procedure. We had people call up the parents on the phone and go through the ECBE over the phone and ask them a series of questions about, you know, how they were doing, whether they had had mental health services in the in-between times, whether they needed another referral. We did those in Spanish and in English. Thanks to our wonderful Spanish-speaking research assistants, Joanna and Alonzo, they did most of those phone calls. So, yes, Mr. Potato Head gets to introduce. Here you see, this is just a lovely graph, that what it tells you is that the treatment gains that the parents, the parents reported on the children were sustained 6 months after finishing treatment, or the 16 weeks of treatment. And that's a very happy story indeed, because you hate to think you go out there, thank you. Oh, I'll skip the... Everybody knows why that's good. This is a little bit interesting. This basically, it shows that the PCIT parents have this maintain or sustain their kind of feeling about the child's behavior 6 months after treatment's ended. It also shows this dramatic change in the TIPS parents after they complete treatment. Think, what's going on there? I don't know. I don't know. Maybe it was the treatment they received after TIPS, or maybe it was kind of the long-term effect of the wonderful therapy we made up. It's possible. So just comparing the change in our PCIT and TIPS clients, we see in the PCIT clients increased positive verbalizations, decreased negative verbalizations, just the way we like, decreased intensity of child behavior problems, and decreased numbers, and decreases in parenting stress. In comparison, the intensity of child behavior problems changed for the TIPS families, but really not much else. So all in all, I think we can, and you know, the sample was a little bit small, but I think we can be a little bit confident in the effectiveness of providing PCIT in home. Now, this is like, for some of you guys, like, you had to do a study to tell me that. Like, I do this every day. But here, we're just validating you. It's like, good work out there. Keep it up. Because, you know, nobody is going to take away your funding. Not under my watch. No, just kidding. So there are just a couple of things that we wanted to mention, kind of just lessons learned. And I don't know whether you want to talk. Okay, I'll just talk about it. We found, and I don't know what your experience is, but we found that really the therapist had to be trained in PCIT before going out into the home, that there were just a lot of logistical problems with sending people out that were not fully trained in trying to really support their learning and in supervision and just kind of really trying to understand the decisions that they might make out in the home. The other thing was that we really liked it when the therapist also saw clients in the clinic from, you know, now and then. And especially if they weren't terribly experienced, that being in the clinic really helped them to access help, other help, clinical supervision, supervisory types of help. And that they really needed to be included in regular team meetings, just the same way clinic-based therapists did. You know, it can be kind of isolating a little bit being out in the field all the time. And it really helped people to be brought together to be able to talk about what was going on. So just in closing, we have a couple of, we thought maybe, you want to see some videos? Is anybody curious about how somebody could improve but really not change the verbalizations that they used? Okay, twist my arm. I know I had it a second ago.
Okay, I'm going to open it for you, and then you can play with whatever you want.
Okay.
But please try to remember to keep them on the couch.
Okay. Do you see the dog?
Buddy.
I love you too.
I'm going to make some dinner.
Yes, yeah, I love starving. Oh, oh, oh. You going to cook that for me?
Yeah.
It's done? Right out of the bag?
See? Lots of questions. Yeah, I know. But better, right? Better. Here's a PCIT case. We didn't show the pre on this guy. That fell through the cracks. Oh, dang. Okay, well.
If we do this, then it'll open just like that. Oh, wow. You got all the plates, all for all the food. Okay.
I had too many versions.
33.
Okay.
Okay. You have the mustard in a yellow bottle. Oh, that's what you do with mustard. You're right. You squirt it. Squirt it on your hamburger. Oh, I saw a hamburger.
That's
fine. Bananas. Bananas? You're right. Those are bananas. Good job. Oh, you're going to cook your bananas. Well, maybe we'll have some banana pie.
Banana pie?
Banana pie is very tasty.
In closing, I just want to acknowledge the hard work of the people that participated in this project, the therapists who were amazing in putting up with us and really helping us work through a lot of, the normal course of human events, and the fidelity monitors and the research assistants were just really wonderful and critical. Any final words, Sharon?
Now, again, I want to also express my appreciation to the group there and also to Susan. It's been a great opportunity to look at what we're doing and how we can do it better. So it's been wonderful. Thanks.
Yeah, any questions? Questions? How many people like that picture of Jocelyn up there and Counseling for Kids? Did you see it, Jocelyn? Aha! Okay, she didn't see it. Whatever. Any questions? Yeah, back there.
We typically try to do a timeout. I mean, there are certainly different challenges, and creativity is necessary, but we try and replicate that. I know there was a workshop yesterday on timeout challenges, and I'm sure some ideas were shared there. But it really depends on what's going on. But we want something that can be replicated, and we try and keep from holding the child or physically restraining them. Well, we have the good fortune of. Oh, the question was about: did we do any particular different training for people about going into the home other than PCIT? We had clinicians who were already providing services through the Infant Mental Health Program for probably about a year. Many of whom came to us. We had the good fortune of having them come to us as folks who had provided therapy in home. So that, and just kind of our collective training efforts, and I think Susan mentioned we do routine and regular team meetings, and so we had those processes already established. And so really training a PCIT and getting more focused on how to deliver PCIT was the bigger training challenge. In most cases, we had a video camera that we could set up separately. Sometimes we did have someone come in. It just depended on what was going on. So for that particular family and how attractive the camera was for the child. Yeah, the therapist could hold on to it and still coach with it. It kind of reminded me of the TCIT, you know, kind of going after what's going on. So,
I will say, that we don't take the camera out kind of as a matter of course into the home. We did it for the research project, and so we had help when needed. The video that you saw, the therapist herself collected the video. But mostly somebody went out into the home.
Generally, we'll bring toys. However, in some families, we use the toys that they have there. But we're trying to standardize the toys like we do with, like, DPIX, for example. So we want to bring those in so that we have that as a more of a controlled selection. I think for the study case, we didn't really have siblings there. We tried to control for that. In reality, we often have siblings there. And so there's that's sort of the creativity factor. You know, how do we control for that?
Progress.
Well, that's one of those complicated kind of clinical questions that, you know, sort of is, has to vary from one family to the next. So, in my view, you know, absolutely. I mean, the protocol is the protocol, but then what you have to do, you know, to make change in your clients, you know, is what you do. And that's why it's really important to come back and talk about it as a group, too. Because, you know, there are other kinds of things going on, like, you know, what's the cognitive ability of that mom? And, you know, is there a problem with differential attention to one sibling over another? I mean, all those kinds of things that, you know, I would never want to say one answer to apply to every situation that you might encounter. Yeah.
And I think another plus is, too, if there's multiple children in the home, that gives that parent multiple opportunities to practice the skills.
Yeah. Well, thank you, everybody. Is it? Oh, it's not my time yet. I was almost. Oh, you guys are so lucky because the next people up, can I just introduce them, Anthony? I'm taking over, but, oh, good. Okay. Well, I am just, as you might imagine, so thrilled to have Brandy Lyles, Dr. Brandy Lyles, and Lindsay Fort come up and present on the wacky world of a whack bee in PCIT.
Give us just a couple seconds to get set up here.